Hello and welcome to the programme. You can visit the website anytime you like, rte.ie/Moody. Well, I can hardly believe I've got any voice left in me after the Dawn Chorus weekend that we had. But if you were listening to RT Radio 1 this afternoon, apart from the Dawn Chorus over the weekend, you would have heard a special documentary celebrating, wait for it, 30 years of Moody Goes Wild on RTE Radio 1. Can you believe it? Let me thank the National Symphony Orchestra for that wonderful rendition of Happy Birthday. What a twist in the end. I don't feel a day over 30. Well, can I just say thank you to you, the listener, for being on the other end of the wireless for the past three decades. Also, thank you to Aina Nilana, Richard Collins, Terry Flanagan and Niall Hatch, and to every expert that has appeared on this programme and shared their knowledge with us. To the various teams I've worked with over the years, to RTE Management for allowing us to be here and do what we do, and we hope to continue doing it into the future. Now, if you'd like to listen back to that programme that was broadcast this afternoon, you can find it on our website, rte.ie/Mooney. Now, I want to take you back to St. Patrick's Day and an episode of Nature on One, which is produced by the Mooney Goes Wild team. This one was presented by Jim Wilson. Ever since he was a bird-watching baby in the bushes, he had a dream to create a wetland reserve for birds in Cork, but one that had a hide on it, so he and fellow bird watchers and the public alike could go inside in relative comfort and watch the birds without disturbing them. Well, it took forever, but eventually his dream came true in the form of Harper's Island Wetlands Nature Reserve, a truly wonderful place. Good man, Jim. How are you getting on?
I'm doing very well, Derek.
I have to admit, I've got mixed feelings about the weather.
Yeah, I wouldn't worry about the weather, and it won't bother the birds.
I don't suppose it will. David and the crew are waiting for you down in the large hide if you want to make your way down.
I'm on my way down now.
I'm at Harper's Island Wetlands Nature Reserve, just about 12 kilometres or so from Cork City. I'm meeting with RTE television director David Walsh and presenter Derek Mooney.
Jim, how are you?
How are you doing, Dave?
Nice to meet you.
Thanks
a million. Yeah, great. Thanks for coming along.
No problem.
Great. So look, it's very straightforward what we're going to do here today. As you know, it's two live hits for the Today Show. We're feeding back to Dahi and Sinead in the Cork studio. You're going to be chatting to Derek, as you know. We're going to be talking about the beautiful surroundings of Harper's Island here. And we're going to be talking about how it came about. And you're going to be giving us all the information for the public on it. And about the type of birds that are going to be here as well. So how does that sound?
That sounds fantastic.
Okay, great.
It's hard to believe that, as I said, you know, before 2017, we wouldn't have been saying this.
Yeah.
And here we are with a nature reserve, with viewing hides and everything.
Absolutely.
So I'm very excited. Yeah. Very excited.
And what a nature reserve.
Yeah.
Amazing.
Yeah.
Amazing.
Yeah.
Amazing achievement.
A lot of hard work by a lot of people.
Yeah.
Planning meeting out of the way, cameras in position. All we need now is a presenter.
Jim, David, how are you getting on? Are we all set?
All set, Derek. Yeah, I think so. Yeah, yeah, we're ready to go live. We have our stars here. We have Jim. We have the birds. And we're ready to go. Yeah.
Yeah, it's a fantastic sight, isn't it?
It's absolutely amazing. It's breathtaking once you actually come out and you see the hides and you see the work that's gone on here and you see the educational achievements that they're putting in here for the kids. And it's fantastic. Yeah, absolutely. I'm gobsmacked. I've never been here before.
And with that, it was time for the first live television broadcast from Harper's Island Wetlands Nature Reserve.
Now, Mr. Derek Mooney is out and about. He's in a beautiful place called Harper's Island Wetlands, just down the road from us here. Mm-hmm. Derek, what's the weather like there? I hope you're all wrapped up, are you?
I am. Earlier, Dahi, I was wearing one coat, now I'm wearing two. It's about 9 degrees, it feels like six. There's a wind blowing of about 23 kilometres per hour. It's partly cloudy, it might rain, but the air quality is good. And I'm in excellent company. This is Jim Wilson, one of the co-founders of the reserve. Jim, how can you be a co-founder of a wetland? Can you explain?
Well, Derek, it's very easy, because when there's a lot of people involved in getting this reserve up and running, you can't be the sole founder.
No.
And so it took a lot of people, a lot of time, the local county council, local community here in Glanthorn, and Birdwatch Ireland really were the main players in it. And, you know, the idea was first.
I was born and still live in the town of Cove on Great Island in Cork Harbour. For as long as I can remember, I've been fascinated by wildlife and the natural world. And my interest in birds began at a very early age. I've spent my life bringing the wonders of birds and nature to the people of Ireland through talks, school visits, leading outings, writing books, appearing on radio programmes such as Money Goes Wild, and through my long-standing involvement with Birdwatch Ireland. In the late 1970s, I was lucky enough to have the opportunity to visit nature reserves in the Netherlands with my good friend, Dr. John O'Halloran. There, anyone with a love of the natural world didn't have to stand on the side of the road getting wet and cold while dodging traffic in order to watch the birds. Instead, you could walk along dedicated nature trails and shelter inside purpose-built viewing hides, sitting there for as long as you wanted, fully immersed in nature. For me, it was a revelation. And it sowed a seed. Ever since then, it has been my dream to have a nature reserve like that here in Ireland. So why Harper's Island? In the early 1990s, while serving as a committee member of what was then the Cork branch of the Irish Wild Bird Conservancy, my fellow branch volunteers and I submitted a proposal to Cork County Council for a nature reserve at Harper's Island, which is situated on the northern shore of Cork Harbour.
It was kind of a stressful time in terms of trying to protect coastal places in Cork. Like, we saw the road proposal coming on, like, you know, that wasn't going to be stopped.
And which road was this then?
This is the N25, which was going to be like the old road going east to Youghal, and kind of Waterford was not a great road, and it was going to be replaced.
Mark Shorten, the main author of that proposal, takes up the story.
The route that was chosen, for the most part, avoided mudflats and was done with a bit of care, but it inevitably was taking out some places. I suppose when we were looking at the route, we kind of realised what was going to happen to Harper's Island. It wasn't a very high priority for us kind of at the time. It was kind of inaccessible, so it wasn't that visited that much. So I probably took it upon myself to have a look at it, and kind of with Jim and John Coveney, we kind of got a proposal together, which was approved by the IWC. At the time, I was doing kind of art classes, and I did one piece kind of showing the motorway cutting through kind of Brown Island, Harper's Island, Little Island. Like, it was, to me, it was kind of a bit visceral, you know, cutting through the heart of a very quiet, very peaceful part of the harbour. Mm-hmm.
And important as well, as it was internationally important at that time, wasn't it, the harbour?
It was.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So you've mentioned it was quiet back then. It was actually not that easy to get into as well, to observe anything. So it was,
well, it was private farmland.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Obviously, the council took ownership because they wanted it for the motorway. And this dual carriageway was going to destroy some habitat, wetland habitat. And then the mitigation was, at the time, that you had to try and create alternatives for the wildlife that you're displacing.
Yeah, but like, at the time, there was a number of competing ideas. We weren't the only ideas. Like, you know, there were suggestions that a GAA pitch would go into Harper's, But I think we fought back against that reasonably well. Like, you know, the council then could see that these mud flats were protected and, okay, we can take out some, but we can't take out everything.
Right, right.
Nothing happened kind of subsequently for 30 years. But in terms of Ireland, that's good going.
One April day in the mid-1990s, I came across a huge flock of Icelandic black-tailed godwits. Elegant, long-legged and long-beaked wading birds on Harper's Island. There were so many godwits there, it was incredible. Easily 2 or 3% of the entire world population gathered in one flock, all getting ready to fly back to Iceland to breed. The view reminded me of those fantastic nature reserves I visited in the Netherlands, right down to the dike keeping the seawater out. And this reignited my quest for a comparable nature reserve here. I started lobbying the county council, writing to TDs and government ministers in the hope of generating some interest in the idea of a nature reserve on Harper's Island. But I was getting nowhere. Nowhere, that is, until one day in 2008 when I was out looking for godwits at Glóntán, close to Harper's Island. And a man came over to me and asked me what I was doing.
Well, I started a long time ago in 2008 when I had an idea of doing something in Harper's Island, but didn't know what to do. But one day I had an accidental meeting with Jim Wilson from Birdwatch Ireland, and I said to him, what could we do about it? And he said, I have a lot of plans, but we don't seem to be able to get them off the ground just yet.
His name was Derry Delaney, and he seemed very interested by what I had to say. I told him all about the godwits, our long-forgotten council submission, and my failed efforts at generating some interest in the idea.
After that, I was in the Radisson Hotel in Little Island, and I knew the county council had a meeting of some sort in there. Yeah. So I went in to have a look and see what was there. And inside in the hallway, I saw Martin Reardon, the county manager, and I said, well, I might as well go over and chat to him. So I went over and I chatted with Martin for a while, told him what we wanted done and what Jim had advised me that he wanted done. And he said, we'll run with that, he says. So then he said, why don't you bring a group up to me, a good diverse group, and don't come up next week, make an appointment with my secretary.
And this is Martin Reardon, who was the then county manager?
Yes, that's who it was.
County manager, yeah.
So he said, don't let the secretary put you off for anything. And I said, I don't think that'll happen. So I rang up anyway. She was expecting the call.
Very good.
And we made an appointment then. Mm-hmm. And I got back on to Jim. And I said, could we get a few from Birdwatch Ireland and the Glóntán community up to meet Martin Reardon in the county hall?
Yeah.
So we went up anyway, and I was chatting to him about it. And he said, yeah, that's a good project. I think we'll run with that, he says.
As they say, the rest is history.
The rest is history.
So what happened after that?
After that then, we went and made up a proposal for the project. And we got Alan Lauder from Birdwatch Ireland to give us a hand with it, because he's their reserve managers, I think. Then we got a small loan for a proposal from SeaCad.
Mm-hmm.
And once we had that done, we got the first hide up.
Right.
The first hide was built by the council,
The
manned shed,
And
the community finished it off, because we literally had a bus shelter. Mm-hmm. And we put in seating and we put a back to it and doors in it and all of that.
And Birdwatch were involved in that as well.
Birdwatch were in that too.
Yeah. After that then, so that's the first hide up.
That's the first hide. The second hide was maybe a little bit more difficult to get going.
Yeah.
But we did it anyway, and we got the man shed to build it from scratch.
Right.
And we had a great community involved in it.
Mm-hmm.
They just loved it. and we had a full house every day we were down there building it.
Wow, and of course, mustn't forget, what's your day job? What do you do when you're not down here?
I think I'm a small builder.
There we go. So you had the expertise for a lot of the...
I had the expertise, yeah. All right, for it.
Yeah, yeah.
But it's amazing how quickly the man shed learnt all the expertise. You know, we had them over there cutting tiles. Guys never had cut a tile in their life. I said, when you're finished here, you'll have plenty of tiles cut. And we got it up and running and opened in quick time once we started.
Yeah. That was about 2 years after the first one, was it, or three
I'd
years?
I'd say about 2 years after,
yeah,
it,
yes. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And then we had diggers in digging ponds for us, or what they call in Birdwatch country, scrapes.
Yes.
Which is literally what they are, just a scrape out of the ground.
Yeah.
And they've been a huge success.
Do you come down here often, actually?
Yeah, quite frequently.
Right, how far away do you live?
I'm about a mile away.
Lucky
mile
you.
And a half, you know?
Right on your doorstep.
I come down for a walk here and the place is getting extremely busy. Lots of people coming in there now. Right. And especially a lot of disabled children coming in. They love it here because it's relaxing and the people involved with it are not worried about their running out in front of a car.
Yeah. Yeah.
And no dogs allowed either, which makes it even safer again from them.
Yeah. There must be a great sense of personal satisfaction in the whole Harper's Island Wetlands project.
Oh, there's a great satisfaction out of it.
Yeah.
You know, my motto always, do it for the young kids of the parish.
Very good. Well, you definitely come across as someone who doesn't just talk the talk, you walk the walk as well.
Well, if you're talking about it, we'll never get done.
That's true.
You know? So
And so... Going back to the very start of our conversation, did you ever think that when we met that day in Glaunthaun that we would be sitting here now in a state-of-the-art bird viewing hide on Harper's Island?
In reality, no. But I was always hoping we'd have like nice walkways around it.
A lot done and a lot more to be done.
I think I could be here for another 100 years doing things. You know, it's a fantastic project.
Yeah.
You know, and the group we have in it are a superb group. There's a bit of everything in it. You know, I know I might be the builder, but we have birdwatch fellows there that'll keep me on the straight and narrow.
By now, you're probably wondering where exactly is Harper's Island. Well, it lies just north of Fota Island, famous for its wildlife park, golf course, and its luxury resort, with Little Island to the east and the village of Glaunthaun just a stone's throw to the northwest. It sits between exits 2 and 3 of the N25 on the L3004. And it is also easily accessible by rail, just a 10-minute train ride from both Cork and Middleton. Beautiful, fascinating, wetland-loving birds which find refuge at Harper's Island, as well as along coasts, on the estuaries, rivers, lakes and bogs across Ireland, play a vital role in our ecosystem. You've likely seen them scattered across a mudflat, along a sandy shore or paddling about on a pond or lake. But there's so much more to these incredible birds than first meets the eye. Wetland birds, including species like the curlew, oyster catcher, mallard and grey heron. While those four creatures might, at first glance, appear utterly dissimilar, they share a fundamental common feature. Millions of years of evolution have honed their bodies for lives spent resting, breeding, and foraging on wetlands. From the long, down-curved beak of the curlew,
to the almost unbelievably long, snake-like neck of the grey heron. All are perfectly adapted for surviving and feeding in wet habitats rich in biodiversity. Harper's Island is a true magnet for migratory wetland birds, and it has been for a long time. The late Mary Fitzgerald was the final surviving member of the last family which lived and farmed on the island. During an interview I recorded with her in December 2022, she recalled some of her memories of the rich wildlife that could be found there as she was growing up in the 1940s and 50s.
Well, there were duck egg out in the Strand.
Snipe?
No.
Really?
Not.
Okay.
If there were, yeah. I know the fellow would have shot them. Like, it wasn't one of us, like, because you could shoot snipe that time, I think, and sell them above in the market.
All right,
or
okay.
something, I think
okay.
so.
But you don't remember many on the island when you were there?
No.
You might get them in the winter, probably, now and then.
I don't think there were. I think they would the water put them off or something?
Would they like the water?
Do they?
Yeah.
Well, like, do you know, this? My mother used to say,
yeah.
there's a place called Pigeon Hill. She said it just be thought and said to insult people, like, it just be said that time that there wasn't the grazing of a snipe in Pigeon Hill.
And corncrakes?
Yes, yes.
On the island?
I don't think so. I think they were out in Corries, because we kind of figured corncrakes wouldn't live inside there for. Pheasants would never, ever, ever, nor a fox. Because our cousins up in Rougran, the fox used to take the fowl. But
you never had that problem?
Oh, never had anything. No, they wouldn't come in, I'd say, you know.
Wow.
See, it was the railway maybe or the water. Right. I don't know.
Any lapwing? You know the lapwing?
They were.
The squeaky
they
ones?
They were plovers.
Yeah, they're a plover. Green plover is another name for them.
We used to call it Plivian Meeks.
That was the name for that one.
Oh, God.
During
the
summer?
We did. Oh, I thought they were there all the time. I don't know.
Would there be many? Can you remember?
Oh, they would.
Would they nest on the ground or something like that?
Yeah, we could never find them. There were always lots of them. They were a kind of a bird we always had now,
you
know.
The lapwing.
Yeah.
And what did you call it again?
Plivian Meeks. Plivian Meeks.
Because Plivian is the Irish.
Yes, yeah, Plivian Meeks.
Yellowhammers?
Oh, God, yes. Oh, gorgeous. Sometimes I try to imagine I see a yellowhammer here, but I don't know if I do or not,
Oh, you up here, there's a good chance.
Yeah.
But you had those on the island as well.
We had
owls?
No. Oh, yes, been Rougran up there, beyond the church there.
If Mary was with us today, she would definitely smile if I told her that the last count we made of snipe on the island, we had 180. So things do change. We can clearly see that the island boasts a long pedigree when it comes to nature. But what is its wildlife like today?
I'm an ecological consultant, and that involves doing surveys of birds and insects and various different things, often in relation to development projects where EIA is required, and also for scientific research or monitoring.
Is that just in the Cork area, or could it be anywhere?
It could be anywhere. I tend to focus on areas in Cork area, but I have worked all over the country.
Tom Gettings is an ecologist who has spent many years studying the birds and their behaviour in Cork Harbour.
There's lots of changes in Cork Harbour. We've seen huge changes in the bird populations in Cork Harbour. We've been monitoring the bird population in Cork Harbour for over 30 years. And since the mid-1990s, bird populations, we've lost around 40,000 birds from Cork Harbour. That we used to have peaks of around 70,000 to 80,000. Now we have peaks of around 20,000.
What are the theories from the scientists?
Some of it is probably due to climate change and birds not needing to migrate so far south in winter. So Cork is kind of the southern end of Ireland, so birds just not reaching here.
Okay.
But there also may be changes in bird populations being affected by human activities. And we see some bird populations which have decreased in Cork Harbour, like shell duck, which haven't decreased nationally. So,
what's happening there?
Something's happening on a more local scale there.
When did you first come across Harper's Island, and have you visited much over the years?
So I suppose the first time I heard of Harper's Island was in the early 1990s at Birdwatch Island meeting in Cork, when people were talking about this amazing place called Harper's Island that they just discovered.
Right.
It hadn't really been, I think, monitored very much previously. And then when they started doing water bird counts in Cork Harbour in the early 1990s, they came across Harper's Island and realised how important it was for birds.
Right.
And I first visited Harper's Island in, I think, 1995, when I was doing monitoring for the construction of the new motorway.
Okay.
And I was doing bird counts in the estuary and including Harper's Island. And then since then, I've been counting birds Harper's Island ever since. So since I've been counting birds Harper's Island since 1995.
Wow. And
I've counted over 500,000 birds here.
Wow.
Over that period of time, yeah.
And are you doing that on a professional basis or just for your own interest?
No, it's just my own interest. Since that first, those first few visits were done professionally, but since then, yeah, it's all been really as a volunteer or for my own interest. A lot of the counts I've done there for the Irish Wetland Bird Survey, which is a national scheme for monitoring water bird populations in Ireland. And as part of that, I count Harper's Island and the surrounding estuary for the Irish Wetland Bird Survey every month. Since we started developing the Nature Reserve at Harper's Island, I've been counting Harper's Island specifically more regularly to get good data on the bird populations here. And I normally try and count Harper's Island several times each month.
Why is it important?
Water birds that use estuaries, what they do is they feed on mudflats. Well, generally they feed on mudflats at low tide. And at high tide, when the mudflats are covered, they need somewhere safe to roost. And Harper's Island provides an ideal safe roosting site because it's an island, so you get fewer predators here. And because of the way the habitat's developed here, it means that they can actually continue to feed at high tide when the mudflats are covered as well. Mm. So Harper's Island is one of the most important high tide roosts in Cork Harbour. On a spring high tide, you may have 10 or 20% of the bird numbers in Cork Harbour in Harper's Island.
Wow. So like 1 in 10, 1 in 5?
Yeah, yeah.
All together here?
Yeah.
At the one
yeah,
time?
Yeah, yeah.
So for that alone?
Yeah.
And the standout species that you think it's particularly attractive for or important for?
There's a lot of species that occur here. So we've had probably had about 50, 60 species of water bird occur in Harper's Island. And most of the regularly occurring water birds in Cork Harbour occur here. But species that are particularly important, well, the black-tailed godwit, which is the flagship species of Harper's Island. Harper's Island holds large roosts of black-tailed godwits, particularly in spring and autumn. I think the highest count we've had here is 2,800 in spring, in April. In spring, you have a migration of black-tailed godwits through Cork Harbour, and they seem to particularly congregate at Harper's Island.
Mm-hmm.
So black-tailed godwit are particularly important.
Flock of Dunlin just went past.
And we get large roosts of Dunlin. So in winter, we may get roosts of up to 2,000 Dunlin. And the total Dunlin population in Cork Harbour is about 3,000 or 4,000. So we're getting 50% of the Dunlin population in Cork Harbour.
And that wasn't always the case, was it?
It wasn't.
If I remember correctly, you were puzzled in the early days about what the Dunlin were doing.
There's two things there. One is that the Dunlin typically come here in spring high tides. The Irish Wetland Bird Survey counts, because of the way they organise, they tend to occur on, not occur in spring high tides.
Right.
In winter, spring high tides are in the evening.
Yeah.
So it's only really when I started doing more frequent counts, not just the IWIBS counts, but doing counts targeting the spring high tides, that I realised that Dunlin were coming in here. But also now we're seeing that we're here at low tide now.
Yeah.
And there's a couple hundred Dunlin here now at low tide.
Wow.
And that's because the habitat's developed now, so there's lots of habitat for birds to feed on, even at low tide.
Mm-hmm.
So going back kind of 10 years at low tide, you would see very few birds at Harper's Island.
Right.
But now, even at low tide, we're seeing large numbers of birds here.
Wow. Can you tell us a small bit about the development of wetland areas since the project started?
Yeah.
The landscape here wasn't quite the same as it is now. Can you kind of tell us a little bit about how we've arrived at what we're looking at the moment from the hide here?
Yeah, the habitat at Harper's Island. Harper's Island is an area where there's an area of land that was claimed from the sea by construction of the seawall. There is a sluice connecting it to the estuary. There was a tidal flap in the sluice which allowed the land to be kept dry, so tidal flap lets water go out at low tide but prevents water coming in at high tide. So while the land was being farmed, tidal flap was maintaining it as fairly dry. Then in 2006, the land stopped being farmed. And then over a period of 5 years or so, what had been kind of dry fields developed into salt marsh. From the early 2010s, I think 2011, 2012 was when we started getting really large numbers of water birds regularly coming in here at high tide. Mm-hmm. And just that kind of accidental development of habitat was really good and has really benefited the place. Mm-hmm. And the habitat is still evolving based on just the processes of what were dry fields becoming saturated with salt and salt marsh spreading, salt marsh habitat developing. But then in 2017, when we started managing the land, we dug what are called scrapes, which are very shallow pools, which are designed particularly for waders. They're basically designed so that most of the water level is kind of at the within the range of height a bird could wade through. Mm-hmm. Waders are birds like dunlin, redshank, greenshank, black-tailed godwit. These are birds that they're called waders because they wade through mud and shallow water to look for their food. So the scrapes are designed so that they're shallow, and also they've got very shallowy grade, very gentle slope. So as the water level goes up and down, there's always some habitat available for them to feed in. So in 2017, we dug our first scrape. And then in 2018, we dug a second scrape. And we used material that was excavated from digging the scrapes to construct banks that shield the wetland area from the place where we've developed the nature trail. Mm-hmm. So by building those banks, we were able to develop public access.
Mm-hmm. Brilliant.
We've continued over the years to improve the habitat. So in 2022, I think, we extended the second mm-hmm. scrape. 2023, we extended the first scrape. So now we have a really nice mixture of wetland habitats for the birds.
As the man who does the cones, most of the cones here, have you seen the benefit of the creation of this new habitat?
Oh, definitely, yeah. I mean, you can see the birds using the scrapes, and the areas where the scrapes were dug, they were previously kind of grass fields. And now you get large numbers of birds coming in to roost in the scrapes and to feed in the scrapes, particularly for things like some of the ducks, widgeon and teal. They particularly like the scrapes. They seem to provide very, very good feeding for them. So you can get flocks of hundreds of those ducks on the scrapes.
Right.
And they also, for visitors, they provide one of the other objectives of digging the scrapes was to bring birds close to where there were viewing opportunities. So a lot of the best habitat at Harper's Island is quite distant from where the hides and the public access is. So by constructing the scrapes, we are able to bring birds closer to the hides. And create more viewing opportunities for visitors. As a consultant, I often write a lot of reports and recommend things, but this is a place where you've been able to put things into practice and see how things work. And it's actually, all the work I do here, I'm not being paid for, it's actually benefited me hugely in terms of giving practical experiences, what works, what doesn't work. There's a lot of guidance available about how to create scrapes, but we've learned that the things that the guidance doesn't tell you, as it's always the case.
Yeah.
This is one of the few places in Cork Harbour where you can get really good views of birds. While Cork Harbour is a great place it's very important for its water bird populations, most places in Cork Harbour, they're quite distant and are difficult to see. And you can do a count, but you're not going to get birds very close to you. Yeah. But Harper's Island, you can just come here and stand and hide and watch hundreds or thousands of birds, you know, within kind of 50 or 100 metres of the hide.
As Thomas said, winter is the prime season for seeing high numbers of birds at the reserve, both in terms of the diversity of species and the sheer volume of the individuals present. These birds travel to Harper's Island from all over the higher latitudes of the Northern Hemisphere. Many of our wetland birds breed in the far northern reaches of Europe, Asia, and North America. Exotic locations such as Siberia, Iceland, and the high Canadian Arctic. As the harsh northern winter begins to bite there, as it inevitably will As the end of each year draws near, these remarkable birds embark on their almost mind-boggling, tough, long-distance journeys to warmer climes, such as Ireland, where they see out the winter before returning north once again to raise their families. They are born survivors, accomplishing astonishing annual feats of endurance simply to make it through life. Just imagine travelling thousands of kilometres across vast oceans and entire continents for a chance to reach a safe haven, teeming with food and away from the freezing temperatures and months-long darkness of the far north. That's exactly what these wetland birds do, what they absolutely must do. Some of these intrepid travellers make Ireland their winter home, whilst others continue through to places like southern Europe and the west coast of Africa. In fact, Ireland becomes a crucial refuelling stopover for many of these long-haul frequent flyers, offering them benign weather conditions and rich feeding grounds.
And Harper's since 2012. Kind of sorry it wasn't sooner, but 2012 I got started here, and it's been annual or regular ever since. Looking at my figures today, I've ringed about 1,667 new birds. Now, the total catch has been over 2,000, you know, allowing for retraps and birds that have previously been ringed.
Barry O'Mahony is a highly trained bird ringer. He has been catching, tagging and studying the wetland birds on the reserve for many years, all under licence from the National Parks and Wildlife Service. So I was keen to ask him about some of the most interesting things he has discovered about the birds that visit Harper's Island from far and wide.
Well, the target primarily was wading birds, all the shorebirds that roost in here. My favourite targets were black-tailed godwits, which have been spoken about on this topic before, or on this island.
Yeah.
Whimbrel in recent years to colouring them, and Dunlin. It's a good spot for roosting Dunlin at night. You know, you'll get flocks of 500 or 600 without any trouble, and if I can catch 50 or 60 of those on a night, then it's not too bad. And I think over the years I've done about 890 or so Dunlin.
So plus, when you say done, you mean
I've caught them.
Caught them and ringed them.
They're new birds, plus maybe a dozen or 15 or so retraps and controls from other countries.
Yeah. Generally speaking, what have we learned about them? Well, the birds of Harper's Island in particular.
The best thing when you ring birds is you find out where they've come from and where they go to. Yeah. The advantage of ringing them is essentially they've got a little identifier on their leg for life. Mm. So if they're seen or photographed elsewhere, it might be possible to read the inscription. If they're found dead or trapped by another ringer elsewhere, same story, you'll get a history. Colour ringing adds greatly to that, particularly with the black-tailed godwits and the whimbrel here, but obviously with Dunlin from elsewhere, that some colouring birds from those places can be seen here. I don't need to catch them, obviously, to identify them if they're already colour ringed, but certainly ringing and colour ringing adds greatly to the ability of working out where birds frequent throughout the year, be it the breeding season, the migration time and the wintering season. And I recently read a paper where there is great value in colour ringing waders, because if you do standard environmental impact assessments for particular studies, you might think that 5 or 10% of a population is using an area, but if you concentrate on colour ringing, you could find out that maybe 70% of that population is using that area. And it kind of calls into question the accuracy of previous assessments for environmental issues.
And can you just give us an idea as where the birds that use Harper's Island wetlands, especially the shorebirds, where are they coming from?
Well, the whimbrel are mainly Icelandic breeders. There are some from Scotland that have been in, not necessarily in Harper's, but in other sites in County Cork. They pass through here on migration to spend the winter in Western Africa, Guinea-Bissau,
primarily, and on their way back they'll visit here again. So by colouring in them on Harper's, we can see which individuals actually come back to Harper's. And in recent years, we've had one bird that has come back within a day or two of his ringing date. In each of the subsequent 5 years, and hopefully 6 years by next April. With the black-tailed godwits, again, Icelandic breeders, a few of the birds ringed here, maybe a half a dozen or so, have been found on breeding sites in Iceland. But the interesting thing about them is that where they move in the meantime, depending on whether they're adults or juveniles, we've had one in the Faroe Islands, a few in Scotland, quite a lot in England and Wales, smaller numbers then in France, Belgium, Holland, and one as far south as Portugal.
Wow.
So there's a great spread of locations. And again, there's been another study recently that's assessed all of the colouringing resightings from a point of view of getting a scientific assessment of which areas are critically important for the population.
I mean, we would not have known any of that without your work.
Well, I'm only a small little cog in a huge wheel.
But we're talking about Harper's.
About Harper's. Yeah, I can take a lot of the credit for the ringing here.
Yeah.
But it all of the ringing and colour ringing is an international activity.
Yeah.
So the value isn't just on me putting on the rings. It's the people who go out bird watching with, you know, and report what they've seen. And obviously all the other ringers then who like to know where the birds they caught came from.
By now, I hope I have conveyed to you just what an important refuge Harper's Island is for birds. It is a place that has long deserved to be protected and celebrated, which is exactly why the Cork branch of Birdwatch Ireland came up with its proposal to have it formally designated as a nature reserve over 30 years ago. Of course, I didn't own Harper's Island, nor did Birdwatch Ireland. It was actually Cork County Council land, so ultimately nothing could happen without their say-so.
I'm the Municipal District Officer for Cove, so I'm in charge of things such as street cleaning, litter control, burial grounds, parking, playgrounds, and also parks and open spaces. So Harper's Island comes in under that area of my rule.
Pádraig Lynch is Cork County Council's Municipal District Officer for Cove, incorporating Glanthorn and larger areas of East Cork. Once the project got off the ground, he was tasked with managing it on behalf of the council.
Cork County Council had acquired the island back in the early 90s and had used material from the island as fill for the bypass of Carrigtwohill and Cove, which was built by the council in the early 90s. The council had then decided to sell the site to the National Parks and Wildlife Service and had gone through full council, had been approved by the elected members at the time. But for whatever reason, the transfer had never gone ahead. In the interim, local representatives from the Glanthorn Community Association and Birdwatch Ireland Cork branch had approached the then county manager, Martin Reardon, with proposals to look after the site as a bird sanctuary and a wildlife site. The county architects department had designed and built a bird hide to facilitate that. And then National Parks and Wildlife Service came back and said that they were interested in progressing with the transfer. So I was brought in effect to represent the council in that process. I had a meeting in 2016 with representatives from Birdwatch and the Community Association just to get their views on it. And what came across very strongly at the time was that the community did not want the council to lose Harper's Island. And one of the people that I met at the time was a member of the County Council, Councillor Anthony Barry, who is still a member of the County Council. Anthony's view was that the local community were interested in looking after the site. It was a valuable site from a community point of view, and went back to senior management with a view to what would happen if the council was to keep control of it. The council got legal advice that said that because the legislation had changed between the time that the site had originally been offered to National Parks and Wildlife, it had to go back in and be approved by the elected members. And it was clear from Councillor Barry and other local councillors that local councillors were not prepared to approve the transfer. So in the end, County Council decided to retain ownership of the site.
When I was growing up, it was fair to say that most politicians would have run a mile from a project to create a nature reserve on council land, or any land for that matter. Thankfully, times have changed and county councillors like Anthony Barry could see the clear potential of having a flagship nature reserve and enthusiastically backed the project from the very beginning.
I suppose, Lomar, look, there's two or three aspects to it, Jim. Number one, as I said, the educational thing, which I think is the big one for kids, young and old. I mean, I'm talking about children right up from preschool right up to university stand-up. But also the local amenity that's there. You know, we're living in the, along the railway corridor there from Cork down to Middleton. And obviously it's an area that's been fast-tracked for a lot of residential development. We have now a cycle track running from Cork and hopefully eventually all the way to the Isle. So it's going to bring a huge amount of tourists, visitors, and the local residential population alone to have an amenity for them to go to. And it's you know, when you see the development that has happened there, the collaboration between the council, the Menshed in Glowntown and Birdwatch Ireland, it really is worth a treat. And I think what we've got there has been truly unique for the money that's been spent on the site. Everybody we brought there has been blown away by the potential of the site. And I think, look, it's a good site, it sells itself. And it's so close to Cork City as well. Mm-hmm. And then the birds don't get spooked easily because, you know, you have railway line adjacent to it, you have the motorway adjacent to it. So, you know, it ticks all the boxes from so many different angles, you know.
It's not just me who thinks Harper's Island is special. It has been designated both as a special protection area and a special area of conservation under national and EU law, all on account of its rich birdlife and vital wetland habitat. This means, quite rightly, that any developments that take place there are tightly regulated to ensure adherence to those laws.
Well, I'm an ecologist. I work in the planning department, but I work across the council. And we have a little team. We support the council to implement action for the protection of biodiversity. Mm-hmm. So that we work with the planners on developing biodiversity policy for our county development plan.
Sharon Casey is an ecologist with Cork County Council.
As we're walking along here now, we're just approaching where we're hoping to have our third hide, just up on a seawall here, and it'll be looking down into the estuary and into the island. We're really excited about that. We're going to be looping around shortly now to the farmhouse building, and there's such huge potential for the development of a nature education centre there, and that's something that, you know, that's a huge project. But it's something I think we're all very ambitious for, you know, and it's something that we'd all love to get off the ground.
And do you have a favourite time to visit?
For me, my favourite time to come here is in the spring when flowers are all start coming out and the site is really fresh and just full of promise. And it's just such a resource, so close to the city. It's such an amazing resource, and it's just a great place. But I think I'll always think of it in association with the people that I've had the pleasure to work with here as well, you know. I can't untie it from that. So I love the walk, but I think of the people and the effort that's been put in here every time I come down as well.
The Glowntown Community Association has actively supported the project from the start. I must give special mention to two Glowntown residents, Gary Tomlins and Conor O'Brien, both members of the Harper's Island Wetlands Reserve Steering Committee. Gary and the members of Glowntown Men's Shed have played a key role in the development of the project through their involvement in, amongst other things, the design and construction of the second viewing hide. Conor, a stalwart of Glowntown Tidy Towns,
a keen supporter of the Harper's Island Nature Reserve project, has played a very important role in raising funds for some of the projects on Harper's Island.
There's been a few rarities here, I suppose, that I found. I can remember coming in, that was a couple of summers ago, just bringing one of my daughters in who's doing ecology in college at the time. And we just came over the railway bridge and I just saw something kind of hovering over one of the scrapes and I thought, what's that? It looked like a tern, and you do get common terns in here, but it didn't look right, just even from hundreds of yards away. It just something a bit odd. So I set up the telescope, and it was a gull-billed tern, which is a very rare bird in Ireland. I nearly fell over, so just with the shock. I've seen this major rarity inside in Harper's Island, using the scrapes that we'd created ourselves. That was a real buzz, sort of, and there were some excitable texts sent out, kind of letting people know that there's a mega at Harper's Island.
I have mentioned Birdwatch Ireland a few times. It is the largest and most active wildlife conservation NGO in the country, and was the first body to propose the creation of a nature reserve at Harper's Island. I've been a member of this great charity ever since I was a bird-obsessed teenager, and the local branch of the organisation has long been particularly dear to my heart. Committee member and local farmer Paul Moore has been involved from almost the very start. I spoke to Paul as we walked along the reserve's nature trail.
There's a lot to be done yet. Habitat-wise, I suppose we are to an extent running out of room. There are some more wetland areas that we could develop, but I suppose the educational, call it amenity side of things, with the buildings that are here, the potential for development of those is huge. And it's a bigger project, I suppose, again, but it's something that really it's so obvious to do that we should be trying to develop. And I suppose in terms of the birds, my personal goal or dream would be to try and get some breeding waders back here, which are very, very rare all in Cork now. There's practically no wading species that will breed in Cork. So getting something like lapwing back, that would be fantastic if we could do something for those.
So you're not finished with Harper's Island yet?
No, there's a long way to go yet, hopefully.
It's been a long journey from that Cork branch committee meeting back in 1992, where the idea of a nature reserve on Harper's Island was first hatched. As you may have gathered by now, Harper's Island Wetlands Nature Reserve isn't just an attractive part of our coastline, rich in biodiversity. It's a lifeline for birds travelling from far and wide, linking us to so many places across Europe and beyond. So next time you spot a wading bird, a duck or a heron, remember that you're witnessing not just a beautiful part of nature, but a true marvel of endurance. And please, stop by Harper's Island one day and take a look for yourself. I promise you'll see that with an awful lot of dedication and hard work by many people who happen to be in the right place at the right time, sometimes, just sometimes, dreams do come true.
Thank you very much indeed, Jim Wilson, for that wonderful documentary. Don't forget, you can hear the podcast from last weekend's Dawn Chorus by visiting our website, rte.ie/Mooney. We'll do it all again next week. Until then, goodbye, goodbye, goodbye.
Email mooney@rte.ie.